Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Cain coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, Monday Night Raw certainly had a few surprises. But before we get to all of that, a couple of things we'd like to cover in the news. One of the first things is that AEW, I guess, has released their financial statement for the year. And AEW claims to have lost very close to $8 million this year, $8 million in the red. Now, that's really not that surprising, to be perfectly honest. What you have to understand is, with the amount of signings that the AEW did, tremendous amount of signings, and they're really the only source of income, thanks to not really being able to tour all that much. They hit some shows here and there, but all they really had was their TV deal and their merch. That's it. So it's not really that big of a surprise to hear that AEW has lost money. $8 million is a considerable amount of money. But this is what I think most businessmen would call the building block year. So I don't think they expected to make money. What with the COVID restrictions and touring at a minimum and a lot of signings that they wanted to do, I don't think Tony Khan ever really went into this year saying this is the year we're going to go in black. I doubt it. So we'll see. But look, just like any business, it's time now to show the profit. You've got your ducks in a row. You've signed an awful lot of people. You've got your TV deals done. You're starting to be able to ease up a little bit and restrictions so you can do a little bit of touring. And to be honest with you, this is the year you're going to have to show that you can make some money. You can't keep running in the red. So it'll be interesting to see if Tony Khan and company actually make that money in 2022. Todd, not really that surprising that AEW reports a loss. Usually a business report a loss for the first 3 years of operation.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's the money make it, losing money and everything in the company, and it's not easy to keep it.
Well, when you sign that many people, and again, you can't really tour. There's not a lot. You're only generating money really through your merchandise sales for the most part, then, yeah, I mean, he expected to lose money. Expected to lose $8 million, but he expected to lose money. And with all of the big signings that he did, I'm sure he thought it was going to be a substantial amount. Now, it's possible that they could go through even another year and show a modest loss. But to be perfectly honest, this should be the year they tighten the gap. In other words, let's see if they can, even if they come out of this year and they say, well, we lost, I don't know, $1.5 million. You're doing better. You're getting better. Businesses, like I said, often report losses for three straight years. Then they need to show a profit. So Tony Khan's going to have to show he can do this. Remains to be seen whether he can or can't, because, well, we don't know what's going to happen, do we, with the world that's going to open back up. And I don't know how much money he can even make on the touring thing. See, this is what we don't know. There's so many variables. We don't have any idea if Tony Khan can make money by touring certain areas. We know some areas he's certainly going to do well. But how about other areas? We don't know. They've really not been tested. It's weird. It's very hard to judge AEW because of that. They've not really been tested because they can't be right now due to all kinds of restrictions and things. So this $8 million reported loss, Mike, doesn't really come as a shock. But now I think it is time for Tony Khan to show that this business can be profitable.
Right. It's time for him to put up or shut up. And we've all said that he needs to kind of keep quiet and just do what he got to do, right? So it's time for him to do what he got to do. You know, do what's best for business, but do what you got to do to prove that it, to prove what you got to do. You know, and Marcus, I know I miss Sunday's recap of the other show. I just want to say one thing about that, right quick. Sure. And it is this. They started out the show with the Usos and the New Day match, and we all know what was going to happen, but it was another instant classic between those two teams. And that match turned the lights out on that show. As soon as I saw that match in total, I said, there's nothing on this show that's going to be better.
Very true. As we said on the show, these guys, I'm not sure they can put a bad match on. They're just so in tune with each other, and it's almost fluid now. I think you could wake them up at 3 in the morning and say, go in the ring, and they'd still put on a great match. It's just it's natural instinct now between these two teams. That's why I don't really care if they keep right on fighting. You'll find that in wrestling history, you know, the Freebirds and the Von Erichs, and, you know, where you say, oh, they can fight 1,000 times. It doesn't matter. It's always going to be good, and it's always going to be fun. So, yeah, I agree with you on that. As far as the Tony Khan thing, once again, Tony Khan's position, and he's absolutely correct, by the way, is, well, you have to invest money to make money. We did not expect to turn a profit in the first couple of years. Of course you didn't. Of course you didn't. You're still in the building stage. But your building stage is kind of over now. So now we do expect it. Now we do expect to see you close that gap tremendously this year. So we'll see what happens at the end of next year. Anyway, let's get into Monday Night Raw, because we start out with Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman. Now, Paul Heyman's a big surprise, huh? He comes out and basically just says, I'm back as the advocate for the Beast Incarnate. And he's acting like a face, in the sense that he's putting down MVP, he's putting down not so much putting down MVP, he's putting down Seth Rollins, and he's putting down KO. He's not putting down Big E. He's saying Big E is great. We'd love for him to be the number one contender, and what a great match it would be, and we have ultimate respect for him. And I'm saying to myself, Paul Heyman's trying to be that advocate that's going to be a face for Brock Lesnar, but my fighter senses is going off. And I'm going to tell you, I think the WWE may still want to get to Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. And they can do this quite easily. Now they can. Now that you've put your ducks in a row like this, let me explain what I think could potentially happen. Brock Lesnar says he's showing up on Raw, on SmackDown. Apparently Roman Reigns is going to be fine. So all you people who are hiding in the closet over COVID, Roman Reigns had leukemia and has COVID. He's going to be back on Friday. Brock Lesnar's going to confront him. I don't know where that's going to lead, but let me just say this. Is it possible that Paul Heyman is pulling a swerve on Brock Lesnar? In other words, is it possible that when Brock Lesnar gets into that match with Bobby Lashley at the Royal Rumble, the opponent is going to turn back and allow Roman Reigns and company to do something to him and cost him that belt? That would give Bobby Lashley the belt back, which is not a bad thing. It would strip Brock Lesnar of the belt, and it would start the big feud between Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns all over again, with Paul Heyman having backstabbed Brock Lesnar, which is exactly what they were going to do to begin with. Had Roman Reigns not tested positive for COVID, I'm guaranteeing you that Paul Heyman was scheduled to screw over Brock Lesnar. Well, he can do it now. He could do it at the Royal Rumble. Something just seems disingenuous about Paul Heyman getting back together with Brock Lesnar and being on Raw like this and suddenly kind of swerving himself more toward being a face. It doesn't fly with me. It just doesn't fly with me. And you notice he didn't really say anything about Roman Reigns. I smell a, you know, I smell a rat here, Mike. I think it's very possible that we're being swerved by Paul Heyman.
But, yeah, it's very possible, but here's the, here's something else to think about. What did we say as he was coming back? What would be the money match? One of the money matches.
Oh yeah, no question.
Brock Lesnar versus Bobby Lashley, right?
Sure.
And so Brock Lesnar now has the WWE Championship. Bobby Lashley wants it back.
Right.
And I tell you what, I mean, some disingenuous about him being, about Paul Heyman being a face, but you can't argue with the fact that you put Paul Heyman and MVP in the ring together, having them microphones, you're going to have some golden promos there.
Oh, it's going to be some great fun, and this is definitely a marquee money match. But it's a marquee money match that can lead the WWE back. In other words, your car went off the road when Roman Reigns got the COVID diagnosis. Your car went off the road. You adjusted the car and said, okay, well, we're heading back toward the right path. And lucky enough, you can get a marquee match out of it before you get back to exactly where you were. So the WWE could come out of this smelling like a rose because they're going to get the marquee match. I just think that marquee match at the Royal Rumble is going to lead to Paul Heyman turning on Brock Lesnar. I don't think he's ever left Roman Reigns. I think he's an agent provocateur over there. I think he's one of those, you know, leading Brock Lesnar down the primrose path, and then he's going to stab him in the back. That's exactly what I think is going to happen. That's what they wanted to happen on this pay-per-view. It couldn't because of the COVID diagnosis, so they swerved the car, got this match out of it, which is great for them. Going to be a great match, and the fans have a lot of interest in this match, by the way. And then they'll get the Roman Reigns-Brock Lesnar thing that they wanted, and this will create a lot of interest in the Royal Rumble because now, okay, well, if we're locked into Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, or does to win the Royal Rumble, we don't know. But if he doesn't, then it's going to be a Royal Rumble really all about who's going to take on Bobby Lashley if that was to happen. That would be interesting. I think that would be interesting. Either way, I don't trust the Paul Heyman-Brock Lesnar pairing. It doesn't make that much sense. Brock Lesnar was doing well as a face. Paul Heyman got thrown into it, and he's not being considered a face, so we'll see what happens. We start this out with Alpha Academy. And RK-Bro. And to their credit, the WWE lets Alpha Academy win with Otis giving that big splash to Riddle. But we've seen them individually beat these guys. So it feels kind of phony. It feels like, well, we don't really have a number one contender, so I guess it'll be Alpha Academy. But and at the same time, though, the seeds of doubt are starting to get planted because if you notice, the announcers, who never say anything on accident, clearly say if Riddle had only listened and watched Randy Orton, he clearly would have known that it's extraordinarily hard to give Otis that RKO. Randy Orton couldn't do it. It took him a long time to be able to do it. It's damn near impossible to give Otis the RKO. Why in the world would Riddle go for it? That's a very good question. So now the seeds of doubt are being planted of, is Riddle a weak link? Is Riddle too stupid to really get this team, what's the right word for it, to get this team to crank on all cylinders now? Or is he just trying to mock Randy Orton? What the hell is going on? And you can see Randy Orton was a little frustrated by it. And I don't know if Randy Orton's going to turn on Riddle. I still say it might be the opposite. But I do see some dissension in the ranks coming up here soon. It is getting close to WrestleMania, and we might have something like that going on, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, right now, Randy Orton is definitely over with the fans. Exactly. You know, it's lately he's been super over with them. And with Riddle, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, he's been better, Mike, but I don't know. Something's going on there. The announcers clearly made it sound like it's Tully Riddle's fault.
Right, and they're playing him up. They're playing up Riddle as this goofy guy who, even though he's seen Randy Orton have trouble doing this with Otis, he's still going to try it anyway. So, in other words, not learning the lesson that it's hard to do it and going ahead and trying it anyway. That I think that's them trying to lead the fans and lead us in the Primrose Path to the point of where Riddle's going to be the one that turns. He's going to go, I'm using my head, I'm, you know, that type of stuff.
Yeah, that sounds correct. That sounds correct. I'll tell you, I don't know if I'd break these two up just yet because they're still really, really, really going over. I know that's where it was supposed to go, I'm pretty sure, but you know, I'd still stay on it. Anyway, we get Tozawa and Tamina against Reggie and Dana Brooke. Wow. What can I say? Listen, the 24/7 belt, it's done, okay? It's a joke. It's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. The rules are arbitrary. The wrestling is lousy. Reggie has one move. All he does is avoid contact and then do that flip thing. I feel sorry for Tozawa because Tozawa is better than this. A lot better than this. And he's just getting nothing. I mean, he literally now is comedy relief. And I don't even know why this match existed. Todd, it's just one of those. All of a sudden, the belt's on the line in a tag team match? It doesn't even make any sense.
I think you're absolutely right there. Like you said about this 24/7 title, I never liked it from the get-go, to be honest with you. This should have made that belt more a lower mid-card belt for, like, lower mid-card wrestlers for be, like, to carry it, like, to rebrand it, like, a TV belt or something. I just don't like how where this is going. I never liked it from the beginning.
Yeah, listen, the 24/7 belt has done nothing for anybody. It hasn't elevated anybody. It's done nothing for nobody, basically. And it's time to either bring it to an end or change it so that it actually does have some meaning. Because right now, Mike, it's just dumb.
It's, you know, I thought it had potential at one point to be like the X Division belt when what's his name did what he when Double A did what he did with it.
Yep.
You know, Aries did what he did with it by saying this is going to be my ticket to the TNA title at the time, but no, you know, I mean, no, they didn't want to do that. They just wanted it as a comedy belt. Which is sad, because I still see potential in it, but apparently they don't, you know?
No, I don't know what they see in it at this stage of the game. I mean, come on, Dana, at this point, what possible future could this thing have? I mean, Alexa Bliss will be coming next week. That's going to be interesting. It would be very interesting to see everybody bring her back. But I'm not seeing any sign that they're going to bring back.
I'm not seeing it either. I just don't. I mean, and plus you got to find out. I mean, the whole thing out of the ring with how close her and Charlotte are. You know, I mean. Apparently, Charlotte and them are more than just Charlotte and Alexa are more than just friends. But Alexa has got a boyfriend or something. I don't know, but we'll see what they do with that.
I'll be very interested to see if they continue down that supernatural path. They were kind of trying to steer away from, and they even destroyed the Lily doll. So it would make you think that well, that's them trying to get away from it. But they also, I think, fully realize that that's Alexa Bliss's biggest thing that she's done probably ever. And I don't know if they want to bring her back as normal. It'll be interesting to see how she does return, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right that, like you said, with this Alexa Bliss thing, when she was doing that Bray Wyatt slash Fiend thing, you know, I sort of liked it. I don't know now, when she comes back, how
well, that's the thing. We'll see where it goes. Carmella, Queen Zelina defend their belts against Rhea Ripley and Nikki. Ash, ouch. We all know where this is going. I mean, we don't know for sure if Rhea Ripley is going to turn heel on Nikki because she's a loser, or is Nikki going to turn heel because Nikki would make more sense. And I'll tell you why Nikki would make more sense, because Nikki has the twisted logic. It's very funny. I was the woman's champion before I hooked up with you. And yeah, we became the tag team champions, but I don't seem to be able to get out of my own way since I'm with you. I think, you know, you're the problem. I don't think I'm the problem because I held a singles belt. You're the problem, even though she's the one getting pinned. So she has that twisted logic if she wants to use it. I don't know what Rhea Ripley would do. I mean, Rhea Ripley beating on her would seem a little ridiculous. I don't know where they're going to go with this. I know they're making Nikki Ash look terrible. Just terrible. I mean, this match was. And here's the thing. At this stage of the game with Zelina and Carmella, it's almost like they're cosplaying pro wrestlers that no one's even trying. It's just a few little moves, and it reminds me of a high school play where you're like, oh, isn't it cute they're trying to be actors? It just doesn't feel right, Mike. It doesn't feel like a real wrestling match.
Yeah, and that doesn't feel right. And look, we've seen what happened with some of these people that have been let go, and we know that Nikki Ash's boy, her husband, is no longer in the company. And without Nikki Ash, what are they going to do with? Because she's basically given her some personality, a little bit of personality. You know, has Nikki Ash, Nikki Cross,
right,
whatever you want to
yep.
call her. And so, if you split them up, what does that do with Rhea Ripley's personality, and how long will she be around after that? You know.
See, that's the thing. Rhea Ripley's already very unhappy. I don't know what they're going to do to try to appease her. Obviously, they're going to try to put her back in the singles ranks, but I don't know. We'll see what happens with that. Anyway, get Becky Lynch and Liv Morgan angle. And once again, Liv Morgan put on a great performance. She really did. Probably the performance of her career so far at day one. But man, the mic work just, I tell you, she cannot help it. Your voice is your voice. But she has an annoying voice. She always sounds like some bratty kid complaining that they have to go to bed too early and bitching at their parents. It's going to hurt her as a face if she doesn't do something about it. I don't know what she can do about it. The delivery has to change because that's exactly how it comes off all the time. And Becky Lynch's doesn't. Becky Lynch has come off natural and fine. And she's doing the best she can to get the crowd to turn on her. But it's an uphill battle. It's really an uphill battle. Then Bianca Belair comes out. And Bianca Belair, once again, going back to might as well be a heel. I mean, basically saying, well, listen, Liv, you know, no offense to you, but you know, you've had your shot and you blew it. And I sat back and allowed other people to have their chance. It's like, ouch. What do you mean you allowed it? Sit back and allowed it. That doesn't sound good. Looks like we might get some kind of a triple threat or something there. I don't know. Becky Lynch is holding this whole thing together, to be honest. And Bianca Belair is a fantastic athlete and a fantastic wrestler. But they've got to make up their mind what they want her to do. Either she has to come out there and be confident but humble, or she's got to be a trash-talking heel. But she can't be both, one week and one the other. She can't come out one week crying, saying, this is what I will live for my whole life, and I always strove to be the best, and I never thought I'd get here, and it's thanks to all of you. And then next week say, I'm the best, and I've always been the best, and everything I do is the best. Well, then I don't know, because you're muddying up your character, and people don't know what the hell to make of it. So I don't know, man. I mean, we've got – here's the problem. When the most likable character in this what could be a three-woman match is the heel – then you got a problem, Mike.
You really do, and that's the thing. I mean, look, we've always said that not only should they flip the Street Profits, but they also should flip Bianca. You know, make her heel. I mean, I've always liked her better as a heel anyway, and the fact of the matter is they're trying really hard with Becky, but the fans just aren't taking it. You know, they just aren't buying it. They want to cheer Becky Lynch, and that's what they're doing. You know,
and the reason they're cheering, you know, I once said to there's a tired now, but. There was an indie wrestler by the name of Joseph Vunch, and he played a, you know, sort of a heelish character. I mean, he had a little bit of, like, even, like, I guess, like, almost Nazi overtone, but fans didn't want to boo him. And I remember having a conversation with him prior to an indie show where he said, the promoters are a little upset with me because they said, you're not really getting over as a heel. And I told him, well, you're not going to get over as a heel when you're the most likable guy and you're the most professional. People see that. The indie crowd looks at you and says, this guy looks like a pro. He is a pro. But what I'm saying is this guy looks like big time, acts big time, engages in the crowd. He's the guy you sort of come to see. And if he's the guy you sort of come to see, they're not going to boo you. It's just as simple as that. You can't have a really good heel without having a super over face. And the guys they're putting him in there against, no one was invested in. So the crowd was cheering for him. And I said, this is not your fault. What is it they do? They want you to take two guys with no personality and somehow make the crowd cheer them over you when they're coming out looking like amateurs compared to you. It's not going to happen. And I'm not saying Bianca Belair, by any stretch of the imagination, is coming out looking like an amateur. She is probably the best of the three as far as an actual wrestling. But her character is very unlikable at times, very unlikable. Now, I know they wanted to start this thing between her and Liv Morgan, but you have to make Bianca Belair a little more likable. She can't come out there and basically say, I graciously stepped aside to allow the lower card to have their shot. Well, what the hell is that? That's basically what she said. I know I'm so dominant, I'd be the only one, is basically what she's saying. Well, that's a heel. I mean, she should have come out there and said, so Liv Morgan gave you everything that she had. And it was enough to beat you. You just got lucky. You get lucky a lot. You're one of those champions. No wonder you're Irish, because you have the luck of the Irish. But luck runs out eventually. And either myself or Liv, we don't need luck. If anyone should have had an attitude, should have been Liv Morgan. You could buy her as being, well, she's a little flighty sometimes. Sometimes she's a heel, sometimes she's a face. She's a little, you know, she's like that. No, Bianca Belair came off as, well, I graciously stepped aside, took a little speed bump. Dewdrop, well, that makes Dewdrop look good. Dewdrop is a speed bump. I don't understand this. I don't understand who's writing this, but they're making Bianca very unlikable. And Liv Morgan is annoying. And Becky Lynch comes off as that real confident professional that you say shining. She's the one we're coming to watch. And this is the exact example I gave you with Joseph von Schmidt. The people in the indie crowd came to watch him. They're not going to boo him. Unless he's against a guy that the crowd came to watch even more that they really, really like. He came off just too good almost. You know what I'm saying? He came off just polished and too professional, and you can see the difference. Well, Becky Lynch comes off as very natural. She's doing her lines. It doesn't feel like she's really being a serious heel, but at the same time, she's the one you're coming to see. And when she's the most likable person, because I just don't see them rooting. Now, they did root for Bianca Belair before over Becky, but I don't know if she keeps this crap all up. Look, we'll see. You got time to save Bianca Belair. I don't know if you got time to save Liv Morgan, because her voice is like nails on a blackboard. I'm sorry. I know there's a lot of Liv Morgan fans out there. I don't want to be mean, but every time she grabs the mic, I'm like, oh, no, I know what this is going to be. I can't do it. I can't root for her like that. It's too annoying. Anyway, Street Profits versus Commander Aziz and Apollo Crews. I feel sorry for Apollo Crews. I love, by the way, I love the new entrance thing that they have for the graphics. It's really cool. Most of their entrance 3D graphic stuff is crap, and I really don't like it. I do like this one. Cool as hell. But, man, he just can't get it going. He just can't. And the Street Profits didn't even overly sell Aziz that much, and I don't know. To me, it's just like, let's rehab the Street Profits at the expense of Aziz and Crews. So I didn't really care for this too much, Mike.
I didn't really care for this too much either. And frankly, I think it's probably time, flip the Profits. And the thing is, I mean, if you flip them, you almost have to flip, like I said before, what's her name? Because she's basically acting like a heel is Bianca, Have her let her start using her ponytail again as a bullwhip and all that stuff. Oh, and by the way, I have bought me a Becky Lynch the Man T-shirt. So,
Okay, there you go. See?
There you go.
Yeah, see, there you go. That's exactly my point. Is anybody running out buying a Liv Morgan T-shirt? I'm sorry. People don't understand. I realize that to the average fan, they don't really care that much. They're like, well, I like Liv Morgan, and I want her to win. Becky's mean or whatever. Yeah, I know, but it's a business. And when the business is generating big money on T-shirts and whatever, you're going to run with those people. I'm sorry. That's just what you're going to do. And right now, Becky Lynch is the most likable person in that feud. Bianca Belair could be, because when Bianca Belair really wants to, she can be very likable. That WrestleMania moment was a genuine moment, and it really could have turned the page for her. But they keep bringing her back to, I got this street attitude. Lose it. Lose it unless you want to be a heel. Just lose it. Go back to that girl who said, my whole life I tried to overcompensate for everything. I tried to be the best possibly could be. And I feel like I reached that level, and I'm grateful for the opportunity and all that. Instead of this nonsense of I was graciously stepped aside and let you lesser athletes have a chance. I'm like, well, what are you doing? Whoever wrote that for her, God Almighty, what are you thinking? Anyway, Damian Priest versus Dolph Ziggler. God, I hated the promo. I hated this promo with a passion. When Damian Priest said, well, we'll see which one he gets, whether he gets the Priest or he gets Damian. What the hell are we talking about? What kind of skill babble is that? And then he says, I know that Dolph Ziggler wants the other one. Well, I guess that's because if he gets disqualified, he loses the belt, but you want the hell beat out of you, I guess. I don't know. Doesn't make any sense. Either way, they've destroyed Damian Priest's character. I know they tried to make more interesting and more unique, but he was actually doing fine. It was almost the exact opposite in my eyes. I said they need something. They need to make him something. So you have an idea what his character is, because he's called Damian Priest, but he comes out sort of like he's just a, you know, some gang member. I don't know what he's supposed to be. Nobody knows what he's supposed to be. But then they started this thing where he was sort of like, well, I was a badass, sort of a street hood, and I tried to clean my act up. But I'm still rough around the edges, and if you give me a lot of BS, that, you know, I do get violent. Okay. But you don't have to do this snap, bug your eyes out, I have an evil side and a good side, yin and yang thing. That is dumb. It's dumb. I hate it. It's destroying his character. Wins the match, Todd, but I just think it's stupid.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I don't like this gimmick he's doing either. Like, I've been saying this for a while, for the last couple of weeks. Go back to the old gimmick with the invisible arrow with the flames coming up, says Damian Priest and everything. I kind of like that gimmick better, and it was better and it was much cooler than this one that they got for him right now. I don't like it.
I agree with you. It seems, and again, this is coming from a perspective, Mike, of a guy who said, look, I don't like Damian Priest. He's just too vanilla plain. You got to come up with something. But they sort of did. They sort of did. He was that guy who you say on the outside, he looks like some dude who would bug you in an alley. But when you talk to him, he's actually pretty smart and articulate. And he's kind of a nice guy. He just, you push the right buttons on him. That was fine. There was nothing wrong with that. And then it's like the WWE woke up one day and said, why do we call him Damian Priest? I don't know. Was he supposed to be like goth, or was he supposed to be some kind of a dark character? Is it supposed to be some kind of demonic thing? Well, we could do that. We could have the Priest be the good side and the Damian be the bad. Oh, my God. That is just horrible, Mike.
It is horrible. I mean, I just soon see him go back to being Punishment Martinez. You know?
Yeah, me too.
But I guess they figure they can't do that because that's another company's gimmick or something, I guess.
Yeah. That's probably true. Now comes to one of the most controversial parts of the show, as far as the fan reaction that I got. I must have had people write to me last night saying, oh my God, you must be ready to throw crap at the TV. They just punked AJ Styles out, and I know he's your favorite wrestler. Oh my God, did you see him throw him to the wolves with Almas? I'm not mad about it. I knew this was coming. If you didn't know this was coming, they told AJ Styles, work with this guy. Get him as good as you possibly can. At some point, you guys are going to break up. We want him on his own, and he's going to have that match where he basically squashes you, because then we say, oh, my God, that wasn't just some jabroni squash. That was AJ Styles. They knew this was coming. And AJ Styles is the ultimate perfect. This is why AJ Styles is my favorite wrestler. The very reason you people think I should be mad about what they did to AJ Styles is the very reason AJ Styles is my favorite wrestler. He gets the business. Not going to be back like a crybaby saying, I don't want to lose to him. He has no talent, and I'm a great wrestler, and I think this is dumb. He's like, yeah, no, I know. I know how this works. It's not going to affect his career in any way, shape, or form. None, zero, zilch. He realizes what they're building Almost up to be, an indestructible monster who eventually is going to have to fight somebody who's just as strong as him, Almost. And a guy like AJ, who's 5'8" or whatever he is, and more of a, you know, technical wrestler with a little bit of high flying, that's not the guy who's going to beat him. The guy's going to be, you know, a Bobby Lashley or a Big E or somebody that's a big, or Brock Lesnar, somebody huge. And AJ did exactly what was asked of him and tried to make Almost look as good as he possibly could, because because that's his job. That's what makes him an overall great professional wrestler, is he understands his job and he's able to do it. When his job is to look like $1 million and look like the phenomenal AJ Styles who nobody can beat, he can do it. When his job is to make somebody else look dominant and get that moment that you say, oh, my God, he just beat AJ Styles relatively easily, he could do that too. This is the man who lost to James Ellsworth. Did his career get hurt by losing to James Ellsworth? No. He understands the business. This is exactly, Mike, why AJ Styles is my favorite wrestler, so I'm not mad about this. I think they had to do this with Omos.
Yeah, you knew it was coming, number one. And this, I'll put it to you in another way. This is why AJ Styles is the best wrestler, regardless of company, in the world today. Seriously, this is why he's that.
I agree with that. Because he is able to just take personal whatever aside and just say, no, that's fine. This is what my job is. I get it. I understand what I'm supposed to do. There's always a point when that's supposed to happen. And I hate it when wrestlers grumble and say, I'm getting buried by some guy that has no talent. You all knew this was coming. I guarantee you when they pitched this idea to AJ and said, let's do this, probably understood exactly where this was going to lead. What do you think, he's going to win? And then all this buildup with Omos is for what? It doesn't matter that Omos, I know a lot of people say Omos sucks. Okay, but it doesn't matter. Because they're building him up to be almost unbeatable. How can you do that if AJ Styles beats him? So of course you can't do it. So I'm not worried about it. I think that's fine. Was it a good match? No. Is Omos going to be able to put on good matches? No. But this is what the WWE wants. So you're either going to have to go along for the ride or whatever. Eventually, Omos is going to get beat. I would think that they're going to set him up probably for a guy like Big E or Lashley next. Somebody, you know, with some muscle. Somebody with some strength. And eventually, he's going to lose. Unfortunately, Omos is one of those guys that when he loses, it's done. Problem with Omos. He doesn't have that AJ Styles flexibility. If he can lose, he can win. He can be a champion. He can be a mid-carder. He can be all over the place. He can be all over the card and still be fine. Almost is one of those guys that as soon as his ticket is punched and he loses, I'm not sure how much more you're going to get out of him. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. New Year. Happy New Year.
Thank you. What's your thoughts on Monday Night Raw last night? We're talking about the Almost AJ match.
Yeah, you know, as someone who's been frustrated with WWE for a while, I mean, just the overall karmic situation that is happening right now, I just could not love more. I mean, WWE spent basically 20 years putting out WCW propaganda like it was this giant joke, you know, that the last year was indicative of everything that happened. And it is so karmically beautiful that everything WWE insulted WCW for is coming true for them. Disorganized booking, out of touch situations, pushing old guys, putting titles on like older guys to hold down younger guys, having someone at the top who kind of stays there, just pure chaos that's disconnected from most things people want to see, pushing humongous guys, keeping their style in a way that doesn't make sense, ruining the younger stars, and now losing some of their top stars to a company that is up and coming and beating them in a similar Attitude Era type of a way that WWE ended up beating W, right? And like, we're literally right down to the WWE credit card kind of thing where WCW had the actual credit card. And I just love it. Like, WWE's not going anywhere, right? They have billions of dollars. They have wild contracts locked up. But it's not dissimilar to the WCW situation where it's like they had, you know, 20 times the money that WWE had and yet still managed to lose. And I just think if karma is real, this is just a perfect example of it because
you know. Well, let me say this. You're right, but AEW reminds me of WCW too. They're just buying everyone. They're losing money, and they don't care. You know, it's like when Eric Bischoff just said, oh, I got Ted Turner's pocketbook. I'll just buy everybody for outrageous amounts of money, and pretty soon everybody's over here. And then all of a sudden people were saying, Jesus, I'm never on television. Geez, you bought me over here, and you said I was going to be big, and, you know, I'm lucky I get on TV once a month. And then people started to get disgruntled. So you got to watch that, too. You're right, WWE is not going anywhere. And you're also right that their booking has been abysmal. But the problem with, in my opinion anyway, the problem with WWE isn't really so much they're like WCW as much as they didn't choose to make new stars. I don't know why they did not do, other than Roman Reigns, other than him, they had people on their roster that they could have made huge if they wanted to, and it seems like they forgot how. They literally just say, well, we're giving this guy a three-week push, and then just on to the next guy. Forget it. See, the WWE never used to do that. If you remember, Steve Austin went over like a fart in church as the ringmaster. Nobody liked it. In today's WWE, he'd have just lost 15 matches and got released. But they reinvented him. The Rock went over horrible as Rocky Maivia. So they reinvented him. Triple H doing the blue blood and bowing and coming down that was cheesy. They reinvented him. The WWE doesn't want to reinvent anybody anymore. It's almost like you're disposable at the point. It's, oh, you got your one, it didn't go over, goodbye. We got other people on the line that we want to bring up. And if you don't go over immediately, we're not going to mess with you anymore. That's where WWE's making their mistake. So I would think WWE's mistake comes from is more like WCW, and that is, who's the WWE getting rid of? Buy him. I mean, let's face it. They've got people over there now. You know, you got CM Punk over there. You got Daniel Bryan. What are they, in their late 40s? You think those guys are going to have titles? They're going to have titles. So you can say the same thing. And, I mean, Sammy Guevara just loses his belt to Cody Rhodes, so now the Booker's got the belt. And you say to yourself, what is going on over there? How many more people are they going to buy? They lost $8 million this year, according to Tony Khan. That's more like the Eric Bischoff WCW years, in my opinion. Anyway, both look, AEW's putting on a better product. Everybody knows that. That's easy to see. If you're a wrestling fan, AEW's putting on a better product. But are they making some WCW-like mistakes? Yeah, they are, and we'll see if they can correct it. And the only thing that's left to talk about is Lashley, McGee, Owens, Seth Rollins. They put on an okay match. We knew Bobby Lashley was going to win because we knew there was only one marquee match that they could really come up with for the Royal Rumble, and that would be Brock Lesnar versus Bobby Lashley. They promised Bobby Lashley when he re-signed his contract they'd get him Lesnar somehow. And they got him this way. But I'm telling you, I smell the rat. I smell that Paul Heyman is going to cost Brock Lesnar that belt. He's still going to be with Roman for WrestleMania. That's what they wanted, and that's what they're going to get. Because you've given us Bobby Lashley and Brock Lesnar now. If you weren't going to go with Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar, you'd have waited and said, we'll do the Bobby Lashley for WrestleMania. Because that'll be a big match. So that, in my opinion, like, that gives away that they still want to go with their initial plan of Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, and frankly, there are other things with the Roman Reigns thing that Paul Heyman has mentioned that we know what it is, and they haven't really gotten around to that yet. So there are other irons in the fire for Paul Heyman if he stays with Roman Reigns. So, yeah, it's going to be that. And really, really, once you get – you could probably get away with not having – because he's been – Lesnar's been doing all right on the mic, all right?
Yeah.
You know, and if you want somebody else to come in there and help him out on the mic, not Lesnar. Well, if you want somebody else to come out and help him in there on the mic, you can get somebody else. You know, you can get somebody. You could maybe, you can, hell, you can maybe have Alexa Bliss come and do it, you know, or something like that.
One thing for sure, and they're not going to give you Bobby Lashley versus Brock Lesnar if they didn't have a bigger match or a match they thought was going to be more valuable at WrestleMania. So I think that gives it away, caller, that Paul Heyman is probably turning on Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, you know, I think just going back, so I've kind of heard, like, the whole AEW piece, like, kind of similar to what you're saying. I think there's a couple things that I would counter that with, right? I think anyone that's run a business, sometimes you need to start off doing something that isn't going to make money at first to generate headlines, right? AEW's still on its initial contract for television. They don't have a streaming deal yet. They're running fewer. You know, it's not a surprise that they're losing money now. That being said, I think you are right with the roster piece. But at the same time, the reason I think they're in this spot is how could they have ever imagined that WWE would just cut all of this real legitimate talent, right? It's not like they're bringing in Braun Strowman and all these random NXT guys that are getting cut. They're bringing in, like, they're going to bring in Keith Lee. Like, you know what's going to happen, but Keith Lee is a star. Like, what? Why would WWE have cut? You know, and I'll say this in very, very much, like, serious. This is a time where you want, you know, more African American diverse stars, right? Like, what? Why are you cutting people that are legitimate stars to handle the competition? And so I think.
Well, let me go with Keith Lee first. I have a sneaking suspicion, and I saw Keith live, and I've spoken to Keith Lee on several occasions in Jersey Indies. I have a feeling, a sneaking suspicion, that the WWE thinks Keith Lee is not healthy, heart-wise. Sneaking suspicion that some of those medical tests after his COVID didn't come back the way the WWE liked. And they gave him a little bit of a leeway and said, you know what, we're not comfortable. I really genuinely have that feeling. Because you're right. There's no other reason to let Keith Lee go. If you can't make a go out of Keith Lee, who is basically already there, I mean, you don't really have to do much work to make Keith Lee who he is, then something's wrong. So I suspect that. My problem with what you're saying as far as AEW is the promoting attitude is, well, if you're going to let all this talent go, of course we're going to pick it up. Well, you probably didn't hear the beginning of the show when I said exactly what you said. No one expected them to make money for the first 3 years. This is the way business works. You're going to lose money for the first couple of years, especially when you start adding major contracts. My problem isn't with how much money they're spending. My problem is we're already hearing rumbles from the dressing room of people saying, you know, when they brought me over here, I was supposed to be a relatively big signing, and now I'm on TV once a month, and I'm in the mid-card. And this isn't what I signed up for. And I think AEW is going to have the WWE problem, where they're going to say, well, we only got so much TV time, and we can't get everybody on it, and half the people we can't get on it are very unhappy. And they don't want to stay here because they thought they were going to be big. I mean, at this stage of the game, look at Andrade. I'm terribly, miserably unhappy. I'm a mid-carder, and I don't belong on the mid-card. I'm this, and I'm that, and AEW treat me how? They treat him the exact same way as a mid-carder. He's not being treated any better in AEW than he was in WWE, really. And as far as Malakai Black is concerned, you know, they gave him, like, you're going to be the big signing, and then all of a sudden it was Daniel Bryan, CM Punk. And, you know, if you're Tommy End, you're sitting over there going, ugh. Great. Before I could even make my name for myself over here, I'm overshadowed. And at some point, some of these guys, I think, are going to say, I'm unfortunately, I'm a small fish in a really big pond. And I thought I was going to be a big fish in a small pond, but you guys went over and went nuts and signed all these guys. And now I don't feel like, you know, my place is here. I feel like I'm a temp. I feel like a once in a while I'm on your mind. You say, I'll put a tag team, or I'll put them in this match, or whatever. So I'm not 100% sure they can keep all their guys happy, Caller, come this new year, because a lot of these guys, Brian Cage, for instance, is one. There's a few other guys who have made some rumblings saying, this isn't what I signed up for. I'm being overshadowed.
And that's you are making a great call. What I'm excited about and why I'm frustrated with WWE, literally do the simplest thing, which is we are not going to bury people that are not Roman Reigns or Brock Lesnar or Goldberg. And you can have a different look here. Like, Balor was reinvigorated by NXT. They bring him back and, you know, he's normal, back to losing again. If WWE could just do the basics, we could be back to some of the most exciting times in wrestling, because WWE has a war chest of funds. And I want to start seeing again AEW guys show up on WWE, WWE guys show up on AEW. Because no matter what we say about AEW, the exciting thing is you can't debate. They've turned themselves into real competition. And so we're finally, after, 20 years of, okay, we're frustrated with WWE, there's nothing we can do. Well, there is something we can do now. There is an alternative. And what I was looking for WWE to do, which for some reason I haven't seen it yet, is react to the competition. Say, okay, competition is back. We can't mess around anymore. When the fans start to cheer someone, we're going to go with it. We're going to build our stars, and we're going to use this war chest we have to start bringing over the stars these guys have already made. But until WWE proves that, you know, I mean, I think these Vince McMahon segments, as funny and ridiculous as they are not, you know, these segments are not always far from the truth. Like, I think the gibberish that is being spouted there, when you look at the product, it's probably not dissimilar to kind of how things are being booked now. And so all WWE needs to do is that they can still do the basics. They can still build a star. They will go with someone that doesn't look, you know, out of control buff, or has a body like, let's say Keith Lee doesn't have a heart problem, that has a body like a Keith Lee, that doesn't look exactly like they want them to. The second they can just prove that super simple thing, we will go with what the crowd wants, get yourself over and we will go with you, we will be in an unbelievably exciting time in wrestling, because there's a reason.
See, the problem with that, Caller, though, is the WWE has this strange mentality that I've never understood, which is, it's us against the fans instead of us with the fans. I've never understood that. When the fans were chanting Rusev Day and they were buying calendars where every day was marked Rusev Day for $20, it probably cost them 18 cents to make, they said, let's ruin it. Let's destroy it. When Bray Wyatt was doing his cult leader gimmick with the Wyatt family and the whole audiences were singing, he's got the whole world in his hands, they said, let's ruin that. When everybody was chanting, let's walk with Elias, and the whole arena was shaking with the voices of people saying, walk with Elias, they said, let's ruin that. It's almost like they do it on purpose. It's almost like they tease their fans and say, yeah, we know what you want, and we're not going to give it to you because we know better than you. And until they get over that goal, I don't think they're going to be able to resurge what they had with, like, say, the Attitude Era and stuff.
Right, and it's weird, right? Because what you're saying is, it'd be like if you and I started a business and we released a product, and our product was the best seller, and it was up and coming, and it looked like it was going to transform our company, and we were like, no, we're going to sell staplers. Like, we're going to sell staplers.
Right.
Screw what the people want. Screw what the numbers say. We're selling staplers. And it's like, it's such a dichotomy and weird, because on one end you have this borderline genius business that came up with a streaming service, that came up with a way to sign billion-dollar television deals and, you know, like unbelievable streaming network deals and stuff like that. And on the other side, they're pretty bad at running what they actually do. And
you know where that is? I'm going to tell you why I think that is, because the WWE has stopped getting their main revenue from the fans. Their main revenue comes from huge TV deals with Saudi Arabia, other things, and they're like, we don't even care if we fill the seats at this point. Your $25 don't mean much to us. We don't even care if you watch our streaming service. We don't own it anymore. We sold it. I think when they stopped needing the fans to be their main source of income, they just said, we're going to do what we want. It's the equivalent of you watching a softball game through the fence and them saying, you can watch the softball game, but you don't get to say what's going on. You don't get, you know, you're just watching from the outside, a private club. And as far as your business model is concerned, I always used to say this. I don't know if you're a listener to this show on a regular basis, but my analogy was this. If I'm selling lemonade and iced tea, and I have a lemonade stand, and I say, I have a lemonade stand, but I also sell iced tea for people who don't like lemonade, and the iced tea is selling, outselling the lemonade 10 to 1, I don't piss in the iced tea to make the lemonade taste better. Change the sign that says iced tea stand, and we also have lemonade. The WWE refuses to do that. Instead, they piss in the iced tea, or they piss in the lemonade, or whatever it happens to be, and I don't understand why they do that.
Such a great analogy. Yeah, I mean, like, with AEW, the thing that I like about it is you can slowly see, right, CM Punk is actually not that over, and compared to some of these, I mean, he's over because he's Punk, but the more time goes on and the more you see these unbelievably talented wrestlers, the more you see like a Hangman Page and an Omega, you can tell those guys are going to overshadow Punk. The Cody Rhodes thing, I can't really explain. It seems like that's just bad booking, right? Like AEW is not above making garbage choices. Like Malakai Black was becoming like a star, and they just pulled the rug on it for no reason. That's horrible booking. But I guess what I can say is with AEW, it's more like, okay, they're making some bad decisions here or there. I didn't really understand what they were doing, but they're doing, you know, a bunch of other things right. Hangman Page is like an A+ right now, right? Like they've really built a star there. Whereas WWE, you look at it and you're just like, I literally don't understand. Like what you are doing literally makes no sense to me, right? Like,
well, here's the thing that really makes no sense is WWE's attitude was, look, we're more entertainment-based. They're more athletic-based. They're going to do 15-minute matches. We're not. We're going to do 5-minute matches. We want characters. We want people to wear them on a T-shirt. We want people to have the little action figures and the images to be able to license out. That's what we want. We're more entertainment. That's fine. Then why'd you let Bray Wyatt go? I mean, The Fiend was your number one seller. If that's what you really wanted, whether you thought the character was terrible and glitchy and gimmicky and crap, or you thought it was genius, that was exactly what you said you wanted. That's exactly what you said you wanted, and you let him go. I don't even think the WWE knows what they want. That's the problem, because they'll sit there and say, well, we want bigger guys. We want powerful-looking guys. We don't want these 175-pound guys. Fine. Well, why are you letting Karrion Kross go? Why are you letting Keith Lee go then? None of this makes any sense. They're flying by the seat of their pants. That's the problem. They're not sure what they want to do. They're not sure whether they want to go with this new AEW sort of attitude that is more athletic-based, which I'm going to be honest with you. There's room for both in pro wrestling. I am not the type of guy who wants to sit and watch two unknown, or not to me unknown, Japanese wrestlers wrestle for 4 or 5 minutes. I understand it takes a lot of talent. I understand it's a good match. I understand it's hard-hitting. It just doesn't catch me as much as, to me, wrestling should be fun. And I like some of the fun stuff. I liked the Bray Wyatt stuff. I liked the stupid thing with the pig and all that kind of stuff. It was fun. It brought me back to the days when wrestling was fun and shouldn't be taken super serious. After all, it's not really a sport if you know who's going to win. It's an athletic endeavor, but it's not necessarily a sport. And trying to shove it down our throats, no, it is a sport. Watch what we can do. We can do 14 super kicks in one match. Good for you. I know, you're a very good athlete. You're a very good gymnast. Now make me care about the match. Make me care if you're going to win. Instead of just, oh, that was a very nice super kick. I don't do that. That's my thing. But the WWE doesn't even stick to what they say. Well, we're more entertainment-based. Well, you let all your good entertainers go. Half of them. I don't understand. I don't understand. You had the world by the hand with Rusev, and you let him go. You had the world by the hand with Brian, you let him go. Elias was over like you couldn't believe, and you had to make him a jabron, and you had to make him a heel, and clearly the fans were behind him and wanted to cheer him. I don't care if he can't wrestle at all. It does not matter. They were behind him. They were ready to cheer him. You did it with Otis. You made Otis not only win the Royal Rumble, but the fans were really getting into him as this, you know, lovable sort of I don't even know what you want to call him, slob, I guess. And oh, you can't have that. Now we're going to make him a heel. Okay, well, you take everything the fans want away from them, and then you say, I don't know why they're not getting over. They're getting over because every time they change them, at least AEW to the fans. It really, and we have said, Mike, I don't know how I've been saying this on the show. It seems like WWE listens to fans and says, do the exact opposite. They're not going to tell us what to do. And I just do not get that when it comes to a business.
Right. Think about this. What's one of the most over things right now in the WWE? Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss, right?
It's either over or it's not over. Yeah, I mean, fans either love it or hate it. Yep.
Right, but for the ones who love it, it's over. Okay. I fully expect at some point that something's gonna happen that they're gonna say, "Oh, it's too over," and they got to cut it off at the knees like they've done everything else. I mean, look, as much as we don't like Rick Boogs, he's somewhat over, you know. And that's kind of due to Nakamura. Nakamura helped him out a whole bunch. Nakamura is like AJ Styles, you know.
Yeah, no, there's no question. Nakamura, you know, look. Nakamura deserves a lot better, but Nakamura is one of those guys who's like, listen, I'm not working too hard and I'm making big money, and that sounds great to me. So, you know, God bless him. That's the way he wants to run his career. That's fine. Boog's thing, what'd you do? You substituted Elias, who was totally over, especially as a face, because he could make up those ridiculous songs about heels and make them, you know, embarrassed. Nope, couldn't do that. So you have Rick Boogs, who really doesn't make up any songs. He just screams in a heavy metal voice and plays a little bit of lead. And he's not really that over, because fans are like, okay, well, it's a one-trick pony. Elias was never that one-trick pony. He had a good rapport with the fans. He wasn't a great wrestler, but he had a good rapport with the fans. And you ruin that. It's very difficult to be a WWE fan, because it almost feels like they're purposely fucking with you. That it almost feels like they're saying, yeah, you like this, huh? Take it away from him, guy, huh? He's released. Oh, you don't want to see this person anymore, huh? Well, we're giving them 15 minutes, and we're giving your favorite wrestler 3. It really feels like that sometimes. And it's really aggravating. I mean, it would really it's like the equivalent of your favorite baseball team putting up players on the field you know ain't going to win. When you got guys sitting on the bench who you say, well, they could help the team. And the manager saying, no, I don't think so. Well, that's annoying. And that's exactly what the WWE does. They do it on a regular basis. So there's a big antithesis between the AEW and WWE. And the AEW almost has too much talent, and they don't know what to do with it. And they probably overbought. And they're going to have to deal with that soon. WWE's released so much talent that some of the people they kept, unfortunately, I don't think the fans see the same in them as the WWE sees in them. You know, Buster Martinez was fine the way he was, and now you're going to make him this, I don't know what the hell you're doing. It's just terrible, and it doesn't work. And he can't do it well, by the way. He looks like Ricky Ricardo on I Love Lucy when Lucy does something, and he bugs his eyes out and says, Lucy, what have you done now? I don't want to see that. Because he's dumb, and he doesn't look good. And it makes him look like a crappy pro wrestler, because you say, well, okay, he's going to freak out and lose. How does that help him in any way, shape, or form? I don't get it. I don't get the Otis heel turn. There's so many things I do not get about the characterizations in the WWE, and it frustrates me. We were talking about Bianca Belair. One day she'll come out and she'll be like, I worked so hard my whole life to overcome obstacles in my life, and I feel like I've reached this point, and I want to thank everybody for supporting me. To say she's nice. And then next week she comes out and says, well, I graciously stepped aside so you lower echelon losers could have a chance. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Is she a face? Is she a heel? Make up your mind. Is she going to be like a street tough badass, or is she going to be a humble girl with a lot of talent? Because you can't do both in 15 minutes. It's annoying as hell is what it is. And sometimes when I watch Raw and SmackDown, I'm like, I'm so annoyed. by the mismanagement, then I really just want to say I'm going to turn it off. But much like your favorite sports team where you say, oh, I'm having a bad game, but I'm going to stick with it. I tend to stick with it. But I'll tell you, they try my patience. I'm giving this episode, listen, it wasn't a bad episode. And you're right, Brock Lesnar's doing a pretty good job. And we're going to get Lesnar-Lashley, which I'm interested in. A lot of fans are interested in that. I'll give it a C+. It was an okay episode, Mike. It wasn't great, but, you know, it did have a few surprises. It wasn't too bad.
Right. And, you know, yeah, I'll say a C+ as well. And by the way, Damian Priest is dating Rhea Ripley, I guess.
Is so, he really?
I'm not sure if Rhea Ripley is going to go anyplace. She might, you know, if they split her off from, what's her name? If they split her off from Nikki Cross and Nikki Cross, I mean, I'm pretty sure that Nikki Cross is probably not too long for the WWE because they can't figure out what to do with her and they're not doing very much with her. So, and she's obviously a talented person. So
yeah, she's fun to watch.
I don't care how long she, yeah.
Her main problem, Mike, is you can't understand. I mean, I sort of can because I'm Irish, but you can't really understand what she says on the mic sometimes. She got that heavy, heavy accent, and it's like, whoa. You know, if you're not used to that, it's very tough. As far as Rhea Ripley is concerned, she's already wants to leave. She's already said she's not happy with her character. And they did spoil Rhea Ripley. Rhea Ripley in NXT was fine. And you brought her up here and she was just, God, it was just a nightmare. Because, again, I don't think she really realized what she was going to be. This goes back to that story of AJ Styles that I sometimes tell. When AJ Styles came to the WWE, he said in an interview, I felt like I was shitting the bed. I felt like, yeah, my debut was okay, and then I was going nowhere. He said, I went to Vince McMahon's office and said, what exactly is it that you want me to do? And he said, I had a long conversation with Vince. I got the idea and said, I can do that, and went out and did it, and now look. But a lot of these people who aren't AJ Styles and don't have that ability, they don't feel comfortable going to Vince McMahon's office and say, what is it that you want me to do? And I don't think Rhea Ripley ever really knew what they wanted her to do. Was she a heel? Is she a face? It changed every week. Another waste. And now I don't think you can rehab her, caller. I mean, I think she's water under the bridge in WWE.
I guess, like Nikki Cross, and what's really interesting here, right, is – they say they don't know what to do with her. Well, she had a great character in NXT. And it's almost like she's a great example of what you are saying. It's like you have a character that is successful in NXT. You're like a crazy, you know, out of control character. Let's literally do the complete opposite and make you like a non-confident person who dresses like a superhero, you know what I mean? And like, even with, you know, like the happy, like, you know, like the Happy Corbin thing. Okay. He's doing fine now, but I actually think, and maybe I'm in like, you know, a minority here. I thought one of the most interesting characters of the year was the slow build that they were doing to Corbin being a face. And, you know, he was broke and he was kind of getting over.
Yeah.
And then you just are like one day like, oh, he won the lottery and he's a dick again. It's like, well, why the hell did you make us invest in this guy for like 2.5 months? Like,
I 100% agree with you. And that's on this show. That's what we were saying. We said this is going to be a slow build to Corbin turning face. We thought they were going to give him this sympathetic character. He said, I got to do whatever I got to do to make money. And some heel was going to take advantage and say, well, you can do all my dirty work. On a tree like guard, sort of like $1 million man, right? And eventually Corbin was going to snap, or he was going to be on in this show. But I don't know that. But Nick Cross, go way back to Alexa Bliss, was really being held captive. And we were supposed to see that. We thought, well, Nikki Cross would be the person in front of him. right? They were friends. The WWE doesn't know what they're doing. The WWE changed their direction to win. And they're not seeking power right now. Fans can't count on anything. Nothing is organized over there. One week you tune in and they're saying this, and the next week you tune in, they're a totally different character, or they're saying something different. You're like, what happened? It's terrible. Todd, your rating.
I got to give it a C+ too.
WWE needs to get themselves back on track. Hey, look, the Roman Reigns thing is going real well on SmackDown. We'll see where this goes, but I think we're all right when we're saying we've got to right this ship somehow. And I'm not 100% sure the WWE really cares all that much. Like the caller was saying, you know, you think you have competition. You'd think you would say, well, now's the time to straighten our act up. Instead, they're sort of like, ah, this is a great time to clean house. For the life of me, I can't get it. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage